You are listening to the season 4 finale of Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. This week on the show...
Steve, this is not the finale. This is the premiere for season 5.
I guess you're right. Oh my gosh, I must have blacked out for the month of August. I mean, TIFF is busy, but...
Well, when are you going to air this?
Well, it's supposed to be this Sunday, but I mean, I better do a couple of extra promos just to be sure. You are listening to a special Thanksgiving episode of Screenfish Radio. Merry Christmas from Screenfish. You are listening to the season 6 premiere of Screenfish Radio. There, that should about cover us. What movie are we doing again?
Really, Steve?
Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Welcome to Screenfish Radio. We are excited to kick off season 5 talking about Shane Black's The Predator, and I am so glad to have back Screenfish regular now, man. You've been on a few times.
I have, yeah.
Peter Adorian, welcome back, Pete.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here to talk about The Predator.
You have to include the definite article because that's what differentiates it from the original film.
Yeah.
It's not Predator, it's The Predator.
That's right.
Except there's two predators. Just a reminder, this podcast is rated S for spoilers. In Shane Black's The Predator, the intent is to tie it as a direct sequel to the original film starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. After many years, the famous Predator returns. When it crash lands in America and is found by the military, a group of ragtag military castoffs calling themselves the Loonies are thrust into the spotlight as they attempt to kill before they are killed in a film that very much wants you to have the feeling that you did when you first saw it as a kid in the 80s and bring along a new generation of fans. Peter, what did you think of The Predator?
Well, you forgot to mention the best part, which is that Jake Busey was there.
Jake Busey being there makes it a throwback film.
Exactly. I really liked the film. It was really fun to watch. It was fast-paced. There was a lot of action, a lot of excitement. It's kind of the ultimate popcorn movie.
I agree with that.
Not a lot to think about. Not a lot to really like chew on in terms of theme. But that's what you want from a good popcorn movie. You just want it to be fast-paced and action-packed and see those explosions.
Is that... I'm going to push back on you right away. Is that what you want from a popcorn movie? To not have to think too much and just watch total carnage?
I think sometimes.
I guess.
It's the same with, like, horror movies. Sometimes you just want to be scared. You don't need to, like, leave thinking about something. It doesn't need to change your life and your philosophy. Like, a lot of action movies are actually worse off because they try and promote, like, a certain kind of philosophy and it leaves it only half-baked. And that makes it a worse movie.
I guess. If it's poorly written, sometimes agenda, if it's an agenda, can do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still want more from my popcorn flick, I guess. I guess. Not in this one. Yeah, well, yes, in this one too. But you're right. This one, it was entertaining. Mm-hmm. It had the type of kills you want. They wanted to be an R-rated, which I don't know if you knew this, but Shane Black actually helped write the original film. Oh, and he is in it. Yeah. He dies very quickly. Mm-hmm. He's like nobody. But I believe he did a treatment on the original script. I'm not sure if he's credited or not. I should probably know that. But I do know that he was involved in the process of writing the original script. So this clearly is something that he's passionate about. You know, mm-hmm. It's like when Ridley Scott decided he wanted to go back and start making Alien films. People are like, oh my gosh, because he gets it, you know, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And it has the... I don't know if stereotypes isn't the word, but the tropes that you want. It has the lovable military goofs, which was from the original film, I guess, if you want. The hardcore guys. Mm-hmm. R-rated kills. Like, dude, a guy gets sliced in half in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
They are not afraid to show you that he's been sliced in half.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's a lot of humor. There are parts that are funny. In some ways, I felt like, you mentioned about Jake Busey being there. I felt like a couple of the cast members were throwaway action heroes.
Yeah.
Thomas Jane is in this movie. Mm. Tom Jane was the Predator. He was the Punisher, the original Punisher, I believe. And that movie tanked, but he was that guy. They wanted him to be the next action hero. Deep Blue Sea. I have a deep love, no pun intended, for Deep Blue Sea, which is not a good movie, but it is.
Yeah.
You know, like these are guys that never made it to Robert Downey Jr. status, but still were in that sort of genre. Yeah.
Well, I actually laughed when I saw Jake Busey. I'm like, it's funny that he's even in this movie. It's not a joke. But they cast him because they knew it was going to be funny. Right? And he's playing a scientist, which is, like, the most unbelievable role for a guy who, like, looks and talks the way he does.
You don't think it was the next logical step for his character from Starship Troopers? This was just sort of the next level was...
Oh, man. And I love Starship Troopers. But, yeah, just seeing him playing, like, this, you know, supposedly... You know, real smart scientist guy. I was like, this is funny on its own, and it has nothing to do with the movie.
It even has Get to the Chopper.
Yep.
Which, great. You know, perfect. I laughed. That perfect. Was a good throw.
Yeah.
And they switched it up. But I don't know, man. It was missing something for me. It was missing something, and I hate the ending. I don't know. The ending just bugged me.
I loved the ending. I don't
you
know.
Did?
Yeah, I don't know why you hated it. What? How did you want it to end?
I wanted it to end with... You know, I'm okay with them leaving it to throw for a future film. I'm not okay with them finding a super predator outfit, and the guy says, I just found a new suit named Bubba. And it was so bad, man. It's I know it's a franchise, and this is like film number 6. I get it.
But think about it this way. Like, it could have ended with this, like, on a super serious note, you know, with, like, uh-oh, there's a lot of tension building up for the next film. It could have been like that.
I would have rather had that.
I hate that kind of ending. I hate that kind of ending.
You know what? It depends if you count the Alien versus Predator films. That's why it feels like there's been more of them, because there were two of those. So this is, you know, if you include those as part of the franchise.
Yeah.
Which I hated those films. And I am a huge Alien fan, and I hate... the Alien versus Predator films. They're terrible.
That's okay. Justice Ginsburg overturned Alien versus Predator. So you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Which explains why, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was cast as the Predator in this film.
That's right. That's a direct tie-in.
It's
as
a
well.
Direct tie-in.
It's a callback to her overturning Alien v. Predator.
Not many people know that. Don't fact check me on that, but that's that she... And it was uncredited cameo. Uncredited
Well, that's
cameo.
Why she's so much shorter than the other guy. Right? Because she's tiny.
That's right. That's right. But she's feisty. That's it. She's a feisty Predator character. See, this is one of the things that bugs me about the Predator films. Okay, I admit, maybe this is what the ending bugged me as well. I admit, this just, it bothers me when the Predators try to help humans. This is the second time. Alien versus Predator, there's like, you know, the girl becomes like an honorary Predator by the end, and they're fighting together.
Yeah.
He gives her the mask, and it's just, it's lame. But, because Predator, the thing that was scary about Predator was that this thing was just killing for, it was just trying to kill wipe out anybody in its path. It was a local film. It was just this alien came out of nowhere. It had this mysterious powers. Now it's been upgraded with human DNA. And then the ending, it's like the Predator came to Earth to help humans fight the bigger Predators that are clearly coming by giving, like, this is just the stuff that I'm like, dude, we don't need that. We need an alien trying to kill us that we have to stop. Okay. That's what we need.
At the beginning of this podcast, you said you wanted more, like, serious themes. And you are dissing essentially the only serious theme in this movie.
Which is what?
That the Predator is
trying,
like,
to help.
Yeah, he's not just this, like, amorphous bad guy for no reason. You know, just, he's not just pure evil. Right? He's complicated.
there's a moral gray in my Predator.
He's a very complicated Predator. Okay, here's...
There's a morally gray Predator in the Predator.
Here's a question. What did you think of the idea that the main character's son, who's on the spectrum, is the next level of human evolution, and that's what the Predator is after, is that strain of human DNA.
I was okay with that storyline. Yeah. All right, I was okay with that.
I thought it was very controversial that they would suggest that, you know, this diagnosis was the next step of inhuman evolution.
What do you mean you thought that was controversial?
Controversial in the sense that that's not scientific. Like, that's not what the science community generally believes.
So wait a second. You're criticizing me for not knowing what I didn't like about the Predator, and you're criticizing the scientific aspect.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that I wonder how people would have received that.
Right, that's fair.
Right? And especially people who have children or, you know, family members who are on the spectrum, or people themselves who are on the spectrum. Like, is that really how most people perceive that? I don't know. Maybe I've just never thought about it before.
I don't get that sense that that's what people perceive. I do get the sense that they were trying to show it in a sense that it was positive light.
Yeah.
Which I did appreciate. Mm-hmm. That I appreciated about it. Whether or not it was done well can be debated. But if you're going to make a point of having somebody on the spectrum and highlight the fact that they're on the spectrum, you have to highlight it as a healthy part of their humanity.
Yeah.
And so it was an interesting aspect of them to highlight that the mm-hmm. Predator was trying to add to his total by this acquisition.
Yeah. They also kind of cut the legs off the whole storyline, like, halfway through the battle. And then it just never came up again. So
there are so many things in this movie that don't come up again.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
So, Pastor, end of days. What did you think?
Yeah, okay. So it was interesting that they talk about the end of days. I admit that...
You're an expert on the end of days, and you know everything. You know all the secrets of the Book of Revelation. So tell us.
Well, I've read the Da Vinci Code and Left Behind, so yeah. I'm okay. They weren't using it in any deep sense.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting that they use it, and I'm not going to hyper-spiritualize it just because of who I am,
mm-hmm.
but I will say this. There's a Schwarzenegger movie that came out in the late 90s, I believe, after his career had sort of started to take a downturn. The stereotypical Schwarzenegger film was sort of losing its steam.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then a good one came out, but there was one that came out called End of Days. And I'm not even suggesting that they're throwing back to that. It's possible. Clearly, your Schwarzenegger ties between the two films, this and the original Predator, are there. But the interesting thing about this one is the same problem they had with End of Days.
Mm-hmm.
And when they filmed End of Days,
mm-hmm.
they tested it for audiences. And the way that it ended was he was fighting the devil. This was the whole point. He was essentially fighting a giant devil.
Right.
And the way the original ending of End of Days was that he just brought out bigger and bigger guns and shot the devil to death. Like, he had to blow up the devil. And go figure, people objected to this. Not because of their depth of spiritual wisdom or knowledge, but because of the fact that it's stupid.
Right.
You can't defeat God with a handgun. That's what they learned. So they actually changed the ending to a more pseudo-spiritual fix.
Mm.
And so if they're going to refer to this as the end of days and take it seriously,
mm-hmm.
they literally go the same route, which is we need bigger and bigger guns to destroy this thing. And there's clearly no... That's why, to me, it didn't like even pique my interest, because there was something lacking in any depth to it.
Mm.
It was a crazy man on the Looney team.
Yeah.
Who just goes, oh, it's the end of days, it's the end of days, it's the end of days.
Yeah.
But he was like the pseudo-spiritual one.
Yeah.
But again, he's the crazy one, if you will, if you can pick one. I only use that term. They're all kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't normally use a term like the crazy ones, except that's how they wanted to be referred in this. They were the loonies.
Yeah. It tied in a bit with what we saw this film at TIFF. And it was introduced by somebody as, you know, films at TIFF are generally introduced. And
they did.
Yeah. They introduced it, and he made a good comment, which was that in the original Predator, it was a bunch of tough guys who were cracking under pressure. But in this film, it was guys who were already cracked. They did not start from a place of, like, hyper-masculinity. They started from a place of already being unstable, right? And so his point was that it's a different take on masculinity in the action movie. And what do these people have to offer when it comes to saving the world, right?
That's interesting you say that. You know, it was part of the Midnight Madness program. It's funny. You know what? I actually might have enjoyed it more if I had not seen it at TIFF. Because seeing it at a film festival, it didn't fit in any of the other films I saw in the film festival. But if I'd just gone in on a Tuesday night with a bag of popcorn, like you said, I might have objected to it less. But it's interesting you talk about the take on masculinity. How do you think masculinity came across in this film?
Well, considering the film is a throwback to an era of hyper-masculinity, and that, you know, today that's sort of not the way we make films anymore, this was definitely very different. I mean, there was a scene that did not need to be included in the film at all of one of the men crying, right?
What? There was?
Yeah.
How did I miss that?
Key's character. What's his name?
Near the end of the film, right? After his buddy gets killed? Is that when it is?
No, no. Before anybody gets killed, there's a scene where he's kind of freaking out and he's crying. And somebody says to Mackenzie, like, oh, don't worry. Like, he does this every now and then. It only lasts a couple minutes.
Well, I missed that entirely. Yeah. I missed that. What movie did I see? Maybe I blacked out in the movie, too.
No. He's there crying and he's having like a mental health episode, basically. Before anything has really happened, like unrelated to the Predator, he has this like mental health episode.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it's...
Was that on the bus?
After the bus.
It's after the bus. So they'd seen the Predator.
They had seen the Predator, but there was no indication that it was connected to fear of the Predator. Okay. It was just his own pre-existing mental health sort of coming to the surface, right?
Right.
Then he's having this episode in the middle of this crisis, but it's unrelated. And his buddy, the guy who's not able to articulate himself very well, is kind of just calming him down and just, you know, telling him to chill out. And so it's quite an interesting moment in a film that's like an action film, right? To have this moment happen. So there are a lot of, I guess, small commentaries on mental health, be it for the child who's on the spectrum or for these guys who are, yeah, like they self-identify as being crazy, you know?
Right.
But there's also other things that are like sort of macho masculine stuff where the same character on the bus is telling like your mama jokes, right? And they're all filthy and degrading to women and, you know. So there's still sort of that kind of old school, you know, filthy, you know, what the president of the United States would call locker room talk. There's still plenty of that. There's still plenty of that kind of old school toxic masculinity. But there's also sort of this new perspective on you know, the fragility of people with mental health and that being okay, you know.
Okay, I'll concede that. You know, you tie that in, like, with the mental health issues, sure. But see, I didn't see... Well, I missed that scene where he's crying, I guess. But even that, to say he does this, it's over in a minute. Like, the way that masculinity comes across on this film, it felt like Black was trying to speak into Me Too, but has no idea how to speak into Me Too. Because these women, the female characters, are awful. They're terrible in this film. Like, the wife literally doesn't leave the home. She doesn't leave at all. Her kid is missing. She doesn't leave the home. Does she even go out into the park? I don't think she does. I think she... No. Olivia Munn, the scientist... Who starts off, you know, you think she might be kind of badass, you know, and I even thought, you know, it was interesting because there are a couple of scenes she takes off her clothes, but they don't show any nudity, which I thought, okay, this is not what would have happened in an, 80s action film.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have. If it was R-rated, they definitely would have shown.
Yeah, they have nothing to lose.
Nothing to lose. That was showing, I think, some respect for the female form in that particular moment.
Mm-hmm.
She grabs the biggest rifle, and she's running out there with the guys. She's the first one to see and attack the Predator, you know, other than the opening scene with Mac.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as she's riding on the bus, she shoots herself in the foot with a tranquilizer dart. And yet again, the men are laughing at her. It's like, oh, she's hilarious. She's lying in the bed, and they're standing around her creepily, even putting things on her as, oh, she must need some water and these things. The person with Tourette's, Tom Jane,
yeah,
actually makes a comment when she wakes up, says that she should eat herself.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's quite a conversation about this moment.
Yeah.
And he tries to defend it. He says, oh, no, that's not what I said. That's not what I said. I said, you're a wussy. No, that's not what you said. I heard you say it.
Yeah.
So, and then she sort of falls in line. For crying out loud, at one point, doesn't he even say, just take care of my son? Like, she runs off with the kid to protect him.
Yeah.
She has no role in the outcome of this movie that is has any impact based on the overall theme. Like, it was interesting to me because as I watched this film play out, now again, I'd seen a lot of films this week about powerful women and women's finding their voice.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's going to come up in other podcasts. You know, when we talk about A Star Is Born, this is like the anti A Star Is Born, and it was trying to be. It's not trying to be A Star Is Born,
right?
But as I was watching this, I was like, "Holy cow!" I don't think there are any women in Predator at all. Mm. If I'm right, I could be wrong. I'm not looking at the IMDb, so I don't actually know. But the point is not the women. This is masculinity bleeding off the screen, literally.
Right.
And if Black is trying to bring that vibe back, maybe he was trying to tackle it and deal with it a little differently. My question to you is, what does it take to do a throwback? And does that just make it all okay? I don't know.
Well, it's interesting that none of the soldiers are females, right?
Yep.
They're all males.
That's true.
And she is a scientist. And towards the beginning of the film, she tries to take a sample of the blood, right? And they're like, this is no time to take a sample. Like, we got to get going, right?
That's right.
And that's...
She's an expert.
Yeah.
They brought her there.
Yeah. But that's also the last time that science matters in the whole movie, right? Because after that...
Except for upgrading.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But after that, there's no more, like... Like, there's no more... Well, here's the thing. The ending of the movie also doesn't make sense when you look at it this way, but not only is there no more science, but these guys who are like the renegades fighting against their own government are now like the heroes, right? And they become what they were previously condemning, right? And the son has a job, right?
That's right. Yes, he does.
As an analyst.
Yeah.
Like... There's a lot of storylines just get cut off, and the science storyline just completely disappears after they don't let her take that sample.
Well, it's right? after Jake Busey, really.
Yeah. So after she's no longer a scientist, what is left of her character? You're right. They revert to sort of these stereotypes about her maternal instinct to take care of the son. Like, come on, you know.
Yeah.
That should not be happening. Right. But also, what other skill does she have? Like, they messed up her character, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, I know.
Right? Like...
Well, the way she grabs that gun in the opening scene and runs out, and I'm thinking she's going to go all Eleanor Ripley on this thing.
Yeah.
And she shot herself in the foot.
Yeah.
It's like...
Which is funny. I mean, it's funny in the sense that, like, she's a scientist, and they're like, she's probably never held a gun before, right?
Right.
Like, why? Like, there was no indication to us that she had ever had any, martial arts training or, like, anything, right?
Well, she was in the X-Men movies, but that's...
Yeah. But, yeah, like, there's no indication that she has any other skill other than being a scientist. And she's, like, the best scientist. What did they call her? She's a...
Specialist?
She's a specialist, in alien life forms.
Sure.
I don't know. In the Ender's Game series, they call them xenobiologists, which is such a cool name.
Okay, well, she's a xenobiologist.
Yeah. Well, she's got this, like, expertise, right?
Yeah.
But as soon as that is irrelevant, her whole character becomes irrelevant. And there's no reason that she should even be tagging along with these guys, so...
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the fact... I don't know if that's sort of a based on a stereotype about women or if it's just bad writing.
Oh, it could be both.
It could be both.
It is interesting to me that Predator came out at the same time and is considered in the same unit or universe as the Alien franchise.
Mm.
Because the Alien franchise goes completely the opposite way. The Alien franchise is actually all about women.
Right.
Every film looks at feminist theory in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
Some of them better than others.
Yeah.
But if you look at Ripley's journey, it's fascinating because the original Alien takes sort of a horror trope and she's the woman is victim.
Uh-huh.
Aliens comes out in 86, which is still 2 years before Predator. I think Predator came out in 87 or 88.
Right.
And it looks at her as woman as mother and compares it to the alien at the end in this beautiful scene where she's standing there with Newt in one arm and this flamethrower in the other.
Mm.
Alien 3, David Fincher, baby, which everybody hates but me, looks at equality. She shaves her head and she's in a room or she's in a prison planet full of men.
Right.
An argument can be made that Alien... Oh, I can't remember what it's called. The fourth one that's really terrible. It is a terrible film. Like, it's just poorly done. But looks at Ripley and actually almost suggests a sexual relationship, but a love relationship with because she is part alien.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this bizarre moment with the queen where she's sort of with her people, but it's sort of suggested the strength of character of a woman. And so then you've got this Predator series on the other op-ed of the end of the spectrum, which is like uber masculinity. You know, let's pretend the one with Danny Glover didn't happen, but you know, and wait for it. Gary Busey.
Yes.
There he is. There's your throwback. Jake is in it only because of his dad. To me, it's just an interesting juxtaposition because they're immediately and forever tied because of the two films that tied and threw them together.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So to hold them up against one another, and both of them have something completely different to say into a culture and a cultural moment, I think it's fascinating.
Mm.
One of the key issues that's come out of talking about this is the hiring. Shane Black hired this guy who was a sex offender, a friend of his, to have a small part in the film. And it got cut. The scene got cut because when it was discovered that he was hired, and actually I read a really interesting article a couple of days ago, I forget where the argument was he was trying to help out a friend, but is it time yet to start helping people? Like, are we still, because we're still coming out of Me Too, where we're trying to cut the ties, and at what point in the conversation do we start talking about how do you help someone who has changed their life around, right? And this is somebody who has apparently done so, but I don't know. This is what I heard.
I don't think anybody knows.
And nobody knows.
Literally nobody has an answer to this. I was just reading this morning, Christy Blatchford wrote in the National Post about John Gomeshi.
Yeah.
His New York...
His op-ed, you know.
Yeah, his op-ed. And, of course, there was Louis C.K. doing a set at the Comedy Club and, you know, the thrashing he got for that. And people are asking, some people I think are honestly asking, like, what's the, what are we going to do about people coming back, making the comeback from this? How much...
grace?
How much grace and how much shame and how much anything do we need to put this person through, right? Yeah. And what are the economic costs of this, right? I mean, this is, by the time this podcast is released, I don't even think the Senate committee hearing on Justice Kavanaugh might be wrapping up in the U.S.
Hmm.
And his incident from when he was in high school, and now he's like a 50-something-year-old man, right?
Yeah.
Is that gonna stop him from being on the Supreme Court? It didn't stop Clarence Thomas. So,
yeah.
So like this, I'm just bringing up these examples from the other side of film to just say this isn't a film problem.
It's a cultural problem.
And so how are people going to deal with it? Oh, I wish I could tell you. I wish I had a crystal ball on this one, but I really don't know what the right answer is. It's a very difficult question.
You're right. I honestly don't know the answer to this. I will say that a film like The Predator doesn't help. But forget about this guy. All right, this guy who maybe this was an incident 10 years ago or something. I don't even know. Let's just forget about him for 1 minute, and I'm not trying to negate the importance of that conversation. Right. I'm just saying forget about him for 1 second. The film itself actually subverts its own argument on masculinity. Like, because even if he's trying to explore masculinity in a different way, he doesn't. Yes, okay, there's a couple of tears shed, but a couple of moments, if the entire film is beefing up the beefcake in terms of how these situations are handled, then it subverts its own argument. And that's how I felt about this particular film. And it's interesting because I can forgive Predator, the original Predator, for being that way. Because a lot of these old films are awful.
Yeah.
Peter Pan, the original Peter Pan, is a horribly racist. Horribly racist.
Right, right.
Now, it sparks some good conversations with me and my kids when we watch it. We got to skip it. Skip that scene, because it's really their views of First Nations people. Yeah. But I don't think we should burn Peter Pan.
Right.
I don't think we should never talk about Peter Pan again. Talk about how it can be better. Yeah. And I think modern versions of Peter Pan need to be better.
Yeah.
But I can't fault the one from 1954 for being bad.
Yeah.
In the same way I can't fault Predator for coming out of a time when hyper-masculinity was it. That was the thing. You know, women's rights had started to gain control. And what happened? The masculine dominance had to come back in full force, because who are the men now? What does it mean to be a man? Yeah. Schwarzenegger. That's what it means to be a man.
Yeah.
Even Indiana Jones. Like, Indiana Jones, hyper-masculine male in a lot of ways. James Bond. All of these things come out of those things.
Hmm.
But if you're going to make The Predator now, and you're going to have all the predating that all comes with predation of the predator and all that... all the predating that takes place.
Yeah.
The film has to be smarter. And I stand by that.
Mm.
I can forgive something from coming out of a time when it doesn't have the same lenses that we do now.
Mm-hmm.
But throwback is fine. It still has to be smart. That, you know, you can't just play by the same rules.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if this movie is a commentary on its prequel... in that way, right? And we're assuming that this was done, like, consciously.
Yeah.
Then maybe it did fail on some of those grounds. But I think it... Do you think that those failures completely mask its successes with having a conversation about mental health? The conversation about mental health they're having also is not simply in the context of the son and, you know, being born with an illness, but it's also about soldiers, like veterans, right? I mean, these guys are probably not veterans because they probably didn't get honorable discharges from the sounds of it. But they are people who are in war, and, like, that is a huge issue in the U.S.
Absolutely.
And in Canada and all around the world that really is not in the limelight enough, right? We have a particular view of veterans as, you know, being these tough guys who came home to their families and now they live in the suburbs, when the reality is that if you are... bumping into a homeless person in the United States, it is almost a sure thing that they were a veteran.
Yeah.
Almost a sure thing. And so what's our, like, can we totally write off the movie for doing, you know, for failing on some parts, but really highlighting an issue like that? I don't know. Again, like I said, I enjoyed the movie just watching it.
Agreed.
And so I'm starting from that perspective, and it didn't try and make a point and, like, totally flop. It didn't try and be serious and fail.
Yeah.
There were a lot of things that it kind of just left on the cutting room floor that I'm sure would have made it a little more coherent.
Like Gary Busey. No, I'm kidding.
But
he was originally the president of the United States.
Yeah.
How many people know that?
But I don't want to say it was a bad movie because it didn't go far enough.
No.
I think it took some steps in the right direction, and certainly as a commentary on the old film, it's a leap into the future that is much needed. It's no Mad Max in terms of its,
right.
In terms of its shift in focus from from masculine to feminine, or from, you know, what it means to be a tough guy or what it means to be a hero. It doesn't have the same things like that. I'm sure that most men's rights groups are not going to protest the Predator.
Men's rights groups definitely won't.
Sometimes that's the bar, right? Because they really didn't like Fury Road. Like Mad Max Fury Road. And so a lot of, you know, left-leaning and feminist people were like, well, then we love this movie. Because men's rights people hate it. This movie is not going to generate that kind of conversation.
No, this movie's not going to generate much conversation.
No.
I will say that there were moments I laughed. There were moments I genuinely laughed. Like, yeah. I really did. And, yeah, you know what? I'm a sucker for a film that values the throwaways. And the loonies, quote-unquote loonies in this film, are throwaways. They are people that have been, you know, I think it's a quote from Suicide Squad, said they throw them in a hole and buried it in another hole or something like that. They just, nobody cares about these guys. They're the ones that nobody wants to hear about. And yes, there is a fascinating use of this young boy who is on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
There's some interesting stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't think it was good enough. There were moments that I liked it. You want to look at what it's doing. Again, framing of conversation. You know, I interviewed people that morning at TIFF that were talking about feminist theory. So maybe that's part of it, the mm-hmm. framing of my viewing of this film.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just the fact that I saw it at a film festival.
Mm-hmm.
But a film doesn't have to say anything to say something.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at a film, not just like Wonder Woman, which clearly wanted to say something. Black Panther had strong female characters,
yeah,
and still had masculine heroism. Like, yeah, it still did.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel has found a balance now as their female characters and continue to gain equality.
Yeah.
Like, there's a they're finding a balance. You look at the original Iron Man and all that stuff. Well, they're throwbacks.
They're not driving the conversation. They are just, you know, they're taking whatever the data is showing them about, you know, what people like.
Yeah, right? That's true.
What people are comfortable with, and they're only going
that's
that
interesting
far. But they're not driving that conversation. They're not at the forefront of that.
I wouldn't say they're at the forefront, but I would say that there's more of a balance. Like, I think there isn't balance in this film. This film is imbalanced. Fury Road, to me, is the gold standard.
And
you're not going to get Fury Roads all the time.
No.
I understand.
It's a gold standard in many ways. Not just
absolutely
the social conversation, but the effects, the storytelling. Like, yeah. Okay.
It is the gold standard for the last 10 years of action films in my life.
Yeah.
I will say that though there were moments that I enjoyed, The Predator still had further to go in terms of quality.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about the role of women in the film. I'm saying the movie was lacking to me.
Yeah.
There were moments that were interesting and the moments that were funny, and there were some actually good action scenes. The scene where they're fighting off in the bush,
mm-hmm.
that was a throwback to the original film. That
right.
was the scene that I'd been waiting for the whole movie.
That's right.
Shane Black knew it. Like, he
yeah,
knew
yeah.
that was what you wanted to see, was them in the bush going toe-to-toe with an invisible killer.
Yeah.
That's what they wanted.
Yep.
But it doesn't mean that the rest of the movie has to be lacking to me.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of where I've landed on this particular one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted, looking back, I wanted more.
Yeah.
See, that's why they moved it to September, because this is It money. They're trying to get the It money from middle of September. Because It score opened with like $55 million and then went on a tear for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So it was supposed to come out the opening weekend of August. It actually was.
Yeah.
But then they moved it to September, and now we know why.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it. Everybody who saw it said that it was a great movie that was high quality and had great effects and was scary.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that way with The Predator.
Mm. Yeah. Are you going to screen it or skip it?
I guess we should do that now, shouldn't we? Yeah, I'd skip it. I mean, if you just want a throwaway action movie and you're a fan of the franchise, sure, go grab your bucket of popcorn and enjoy. But I would skip it personally. What would you say?
I'm gonna go with screen it because my initial just feeling of the movie was that I liked it.
Okay.
Right. And yeah, after we talk about it and sort of delve into it, it might. it might be lacking in a lot of ways, but my general judgment of a movie is, did I like it when the credits started rolling? And I did.
Okay.
And all so right. That's my screen it.
That's totally legitimate. You'll never be back on the podcast.
Okay.
Pete, thanks so much for coming on. I love sitting and chatting with you, and it was fun to go and watch the film together. Mm. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. It's always
Since you're here, Pete, is there anything you want to promote?
Yeah,
coming up.
Absolutely. So we are very excited to be presenting the 15th. I need to get this straight. The one number, a number, th. A number th edition of the Pomegranate Film Festival in Toronto.
Hey!
And we're very excited to have Screenfish back as well to check out some films. So stay tuned to Screenfish to hear all about what's happening at the Pomegranate Film Festival. And if you're in Toronto, definitely come by.
When is it?
It is November 14th to 18th.
All right. Great. Thank you for that. We'll make sure that we have updates on that as it gets close. The real question everybody wants to know is how many Predator films will be shown at the Pomegranate Film Festival this year?
I can confirm that there will be zero Predator films shown.
That's fair. That's fair.
Zero Predator and zero The Predator films. Pleasure.
And yes, we are back. We are back with our regularly scheduled podcast, if you will. And in fact, we've got some good ones coming up in a couple of weeks. The next one we will be having, I believe, is going to be A Star Is Born, with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga in her push for Oscar. And after that, we will have First Man, Damien Chazelle's return after La La Land, the Neil Armstrong. And yeah, so look for that, as well as continue to go to screen. Sorry, we have several interviews of cast and crew of members from films at TIFF this year, including one from Barlow Jacobs, who is in The Old Man and the Gun, which actually opened this weekend, Robert Redford's last film. So there's lots to look at there. And as always, if you go to the podcast on screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, so you can have conversations when you go to see this terrible, terrible film. or amazing film, depending on who you are.
Yeah.
After you see it, you can have the conversation where you are as well. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and a host of other places. But thank you so much. Again, thanks so much, Peter, for being on. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.